Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about, well, some TV shows coming back, but also The Cruise, and I mean Tom Cruise. And then Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Is it? Maybe. We'll let you know. But we're going to create a reboot of our own anyway, and a lot more. So let's get on with the show. My name is Eric Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Troy Heinrichs.
We're going on a cruise next year, so we can talk about that, too.
We can. Next July, we are going to Alaska. It's our final whole cruise. So details are in the show notes. There's a link. Just click the link. It'll take you right to all the information, and you better hurry up, because if you don't, there's limited access, limited rooms. Exciting. I'm excited. How are you guys doing?
Decent. I'm not bad.
Decent. Not bad. All right. Well, you guys are just amazing. Want to hear about my backpacking trip?
No, I don't. But, you know, we did our sixth episode of the Half Hour Power Hour, or the Power Hour now. I hope you guys take time to listen to that, because it was just me and Troy. No Scott. We kicked him out of the show. We talk about more why I kicked him out of the show in that episode.
That's on Patreon.
That's right.
Because you just said, check it out, and you need to tell anyone where to find it.
Well it's on Patreon sometimes and sometimes not, because our John forgets to check the box for certain people at certain dollar levels. So, and then I get freaking emails all day, like, can you put it up, Troy? And I was like, no, go bother fucking Arjun. I'm busy.
Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. If you want
I got the
to.
Messages, can you make sure it's on iTunes? And I'm like, what? I don't even know how I didn't put it on iTunes. Let me go back and look at it.
Are people still watching it? I keep seeing comment after comment after comment about people saying, I'm not watching it anymore.
I don't know.
I want to say that people are still kind of watching it. This might be it for me, though, after this season.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to be interested in it next year.
So it's the last of all of us, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough. Does that bum you out, Troy, because you're such a big fan of the game that people are...
You need the setup piece, and they're missing some of the setup pieces that actually make it flow. And I think we talked about it on the half hour power hour, or the 35 minute power hour this week, was that maybe this episode should have aired in a different spot, like Fox style. Like if it was earlier, then maybe the rest of the season would have flowed better rather than holding it until this point.
I disagree. I think they should have held the season two game, or the Last of Us 2 game for season 3, because I think you could have fleshed out easily the time difference.
Yeah, the 5 years, you could have filled in with a whole bunch of shit.
Yeah, there's a lot more you could have done with that. That's too bad. But, you know, I'm not here to ruin it for anybody else. If you're still watching and enjoying, good for you. Just don't tell me this is what the game does, this is what the game does. I don't really care. I'm watching the show, and the show has not been great. But, and also what wasn't great is my backpacking trip, and I'm trying to tell you about it. So we got 4 hours in, and the truck broke down. So then we're stuck on the side of the road, and this my buddy's truck has to get towed, completely shot. Timing belt goes out completely, because we're going backpacking up in the North Woods, the UP. We're like 2 hours from where we have to go, and we have to end up back there. So we're all like trying to rendezvous, and we're basically 1 minute short of hitchhiking, willing to offer leg for favors, whatever it takes to get to the cabin that we're going to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then we find out that the truck shot, and I have to drive him all the way back to town. So a 6 hour drive back, grab my car and go the way back, because otherwise nobody can get home. It was the wildest trip. I did very little backpacking because I'm too busy driving. So it's one of those kind of
I mean, you could have put your pack on and walked, you had all the supplies, just pitch a tent on the side of the road, you know, make a whole adventure out of it.
You know how to pitch a tent, don't you, Aaron?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I do know how to pitch a tent. Usually you have to have a tent with you, because we were doing cabin backpacking this time, but going from cabin to cabin to cabin.
Clearly you weren't a scout. You always be prepared.
I was prepared. Yeah, would have been fine for a night.
The climate change, man. There was a dust storm in Chicago last Friday.
There was. I saw that. When we were coming back, we were driving back. When I was driving home for the first of the two times that I had to drive home from this place, we went right through a big storm. There's like a tornado, and I guess that dust storm was right around there. But I saw the picture, and it looks like the goddamn mummy. Did it not?
Oh, my God.
It absolutely did.
Absolutely nuts. Crazy.
Are we sure Tom Cruise wasn't there filming another mummy?
He was running away from it the whole time. It was a publicity stunt.
what was really weird was, like, as I was driving and I saw it coming, that the Interstellar music came on.
Oh, shut up. On my
playlist.
You put it on.
For real. I did not put it on.
Where did it come on? That's not going to pop on a radio. You had to put it on.
I have a random movie soundtrack playlist, and I was playing
movie
soundtrack.
Is it all Interstellar? Like the whole playlist?
No, it just happened to come on, like, right as the EA election alert came on. It was crazy. Weird. Universe.
Oh, fair enough. All right. Well, let's get into some movie and entertainment news. It's Memorial Day weekend that you are hearing this, and that's an exciting time. But we're going to revisit a topic that we talked about earlier, which is the Tom Cruise effect. And we talked about this a couple of years ago, and I kind of want to see, where would we stand with the Cruise missile now? But first, SWAT was canceled twice. Literally, the show has been canceled twice. It finally ended. Now the series ended, and Shamar Moore is returning yet again as Hondo in a separate series. It's being shopped around. They're going to do they're packaging it as a 10-episode series when I go to streaming outlets. It could go anywhere, but Sony has to deal with Netflix, so I'd guess it will probably go to Netflix. Also, Buffy the Vampire Slayer found their Slayer. The new Slayer is Ryan Kiera Armstrong from Skeleton Crew. She was in Star Wars Skeleton Crew. She did a great job there, so I look forward to that. And also, we have Seventh Heaven coming back, because they're just going to ignore that whole Stephen Collins stuff. And this show is bringing back Jessica Biel. Got her start from that show. She's going to produce it. It's going to be a whole new diverse family. Yada, yada, yada. Basically,
There's talks.
No, it's being prepared right now. It's literally, they have a showrunner. They're already moving it. CBS Studios is working on it.
It's not picked up by anybody yet. No streamers actually seen
CBS
it.
CBS Studios it is prepping it. It will be a CBS show. Yep.
Would you let him finish?
I'm just saying, the article said that no streamers actually picked it up yet. So they could have it, pitch it, and maybe it won't go anywhere because of the Stephen Collins stuff. Who knows?
Anyway.
But he's not involved now.
He's not involved. Yeah, it shouldn't be a factor. Now, between franchises and TV shows, we as society really have a hard time saying goodbye to things we love, don't we? Isn't it time we just accept the fact that we can't say goodbye to shit?
I mean, nobody more than Shamar Moore at the moment. The guy's like, you know what? You can
go.
He's like, you can cancel my show twice. I'm not going back to Criminal Minds. Hell no. Even though that show's still going on and he can easily just roll back in as Derek Morgan again. But he's like, no. I'm Hondo from here on out. Look at me. I'm Hondo.
He's going to be Hondo for 27 years. 27 years.
I still think this is the same secular, whatever that word is.
Cycle?
It goes around. It comes
cycle
around again.
Violence is what your words are to my ears.
Totally. Because we're at that point now. Seventh Heaven started in 1996. So people that are the age now that watch the show back then have kids. They can sit down and watch it with their kids, as our parents did that and watched it with us. So it's that same
your
thing.
Your parents like watched Seventh Heaven with you in 1996?
Not me. I was in college that year. So
But parents who watched that because it was like one of the few shows back then that saved.
It was like a wholesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they had a sex offender starring in it. Sure.
Hey.
Go Hollywood.
You know. Hey, never mind the fact that Jessica Biel is riding around in that show in freaking waist-high jeans and making it look good.
I never watched it, so I couldn't tell you anything about
it. I never watched it either. I just
sounds
know
like
that
you watched a lot of it, my friend.
Volume way down.
more than I ever imagined.
Oh, Jessica's on screen
volume
again.
Volume way down. So uncomfortable. Sorry, Troy. You were talking about watching things in college with your mom.
Yes, exactly right. No, I'm just saying that this is stuff that was, you know, 30 years ago, so now it's come full circle again. Those people have kids. Those kids need those same types of shows. We're trying to draw in both quadrants in order to make that happen.
I mean, we've talked about it 1,000 times, but are we getting a little tired of nostalgia? Like, people keep screaming that they want new stuff, but you know what they go to? Old stuff. And then they say that, well, it's because it's all Hollywood makes, and it's not true. There's tons of new stuff out there that doesn't get watched because of all the recycled old stuff.
Well, it's also IP preservation is really what it is. Well, they have to make something in order to keep the IP.
But we're also to blame. Do you not agree we are to blame? This is all of our faults that we keep getting this stuff.
It's usually my fault.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's true. I mean, I didn't say like, please bring back stuff from my childhood. I want new stuff too. But I mean, the minute they're like Wonder Years, I'm like, ooh, they're making a Wonder Years.
No, I can't do that. I won't watch another Wonder Years. It was right. It was done right the first time around. We don't need another one.
For an all-white 1950s family. demographics change.
Seventh Heaven. We don't really need another Seventh Heaven. It was done all right the first time. Let's move on to
all-white evangelical family. Times have changed. Maybe this one has.
They said it'll be a more diverse family. Yeah.
So you can have the same types of conversations for a world today with a wholesome family that maybe has two dads or two moms.
But why not call it 15th Heaven or something else?
They did. It was called the Duggars. 15th. It was called Octomom.
Those
Why did they call it Seventh Heaven? I never watched this show, so why did they call it that? Was there a reason for this?
Well, there's like a whole thing about Seventh Heaven. It's like there's a song about Seventh Heaven.
Troy, you watched it. What do you?
It was also like 10 years ago. I don't remember.
It was
20 years ago.
Well, it started 30 years ago. Ended. It was 10 seasons, 11 seasons. Can't remember. It was all the seasons were on the WB, and there was one season on the CW.
It's an idiom used to describe a state of extreme happiness or bliss. This is like the Joe Rogan moment where you say, "Hey, pull that up."
There was definitely not happiness and bliss on that family.
Look at that. Sure. We are like 2 seconds away from being a Joe Rogan podcast now.
Oh, I wish. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, we could just be like, "Hey, can you pull that up?" All right, now we're gonna just talk about this for no good reason and like not even describe it to you guys.
I'm fine. That's what we should start doing. We should just start throwing words in the middle of a conversation, and then we have to spitball off of whatever that random word was.
Yeah.
Like maybe, ecclesiastical, and then we talk about Fletch.
Maybe right. What we can do is we can have HBO Max, now HBO Max, just change their name to the WB, and we can go full circle.
What the? What?
How did you just bring there. Back? Wait, hold on. I'm actually on his side on this one.
I'm just trying to see how he got from point A to point X.
Seventh Heaven, WB, Buffy, WB. Let's just bring back all of the WB.
And I hope all of our Max listeners WB. Have ADHD. It's the only way they can follow this fucking podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I followed along pretty well right there. I was like, this time I get it.
They have got to be the worst. If you didn't know, HBO Max has gone back to HBO Max, right? So the streamer is now HBO Max. They want to take back the HBO name. Well, you didn't have to give it back. You didn't have to give it up to begin with, you idiots. What a horrible, horrible marketing team they have. Absolutely terrible.
Honestly, I don't think it was the marketing team. I think it was David Zaslav doing his own fucking shit.
And whoever. The thing. And he's terrible at it.
He is terrible. Of course he's terrible.
And he's still got $300 million for it.
He literally shelved a movie to get rid of it, and then it's now going to be shown on his actual streaming service.
Yeah, the Looney Tunes movie that he got rid of. The Earth Blew Up. What's the name of it?
Wasn't it Coyote versus?
No, that's a different
No, one. This is like the Day the Earth Blew Up or something. Oh, yeah, like
The Day the Earth Blew Up. Sold it to Ketchup Entertainment. They put it out for theatrical. Now it's going to be streaming on HBO Max. What? Who is making decisions at this stupid company?
Look, it's Randall from Clerks. That's who's doing this. He's back there going, "We're going to bring back Porch Monkey and HBO Max." God. We're bringing it back.
Also, what a terrible reference. But... I don't know what to do anymore. But seriously, why did you think like Max was the right way to go? Why would you get rid of the most prestigious freaking name in entertainment? Because I will say, like, that's the one thing I will say about TV. When it came to TV, HBO was one you could throw. You can't say this about Netflix. You can't say it about Hulu. You can't say it about any other network. The HBO, if somebody says the show's on HBO, you're willing to give it a shot just because it said HBO. Because even though it's home box office and nobody has it anymore, or I don't think they do, but they just have Max, whatever. But
we'll see. It's because at one time there was
prestige
this thing called,
entertainment.
I know. And there's this one time back in the day where they had this thing called cable television.
It still works, though. It still says quality.
I know. HBO was the cable television. You bought HBO as an add-on package for cable television.
Yeah.
And then you had the streaming service, which was like, oh, you could take HBO on the go. So you had HBO Go. So when they finally like consolidated HBO Go and the HBO streaming service into HBO Max, because Cinemax was part of the brand, what they really decided to do was, no, we need to keep the HBO brand exclusive to cable, because that's the premium package for cable to keep the cable companies happy. And they're just going to use the Max brand name because everything else was Plus. Apple TV Plus, Paramount Plus, Disney Plus.
I get all this.
And so Max is better. Does he like explaining
shit we already
Plus.
Know, John? I think so.
I explained it for the audience.
Oh, okay.
Okay. He's doing it for the cheap seats right now.
I understand.
Yeah. It was a good idea to say, like, look, we're better than Plus. We're Max, right?
That's for Amanda, who can't be here this week.
Exactly. You know what I have been appreciating? I've been appreciating like Peacemaker with the paper signs of the thing of like the different channels and how they've changed their name so many times. And he's just like sliding through the different names. And they've done the same thing with Noah Wiley where they're sliding through the different names and each name he's shaking his head at.
They're marketing. And they've also got like instead of the Spider-Man pointing at each other, they have Superman pointing at each other because they're making fun of the Max name. Yeah, that's a brilliant marketing department that showed up 8 years fucking late to the assignment. It's terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible marketing. They're just trying to make up for the fact that they are terrible marketers of their own brand. I am just irritated by this because I am tired of changing how I say it. Is it HBO Max? Is it Max? Is it HBO Now? HBO Go? What am I supposed to say at this point?
Hey, oh, shit. I forgot about HBO Now.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever stopped calling it HBO Max.
Yeah, it's how I always refer to it.
Yeah. I never stopped calling it HBO Max because in my mind, the whole Max thing was so stupid, I wasn't going to participate.
Yeah, because every show you played on there said HBO.
HBO.
It shakes my whole room with the bass on that thing.
We're spending too much time on this. Hey, our show is independently funded. We already talked about Patreon earlier in the show, but if you want to check that show out and other bonus content, which we'll have different new bonus content on there soon, go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. I think Power Hour is almost over and we'll have something new. So let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Now, we talked about Tom Cruise 2 years ago when the last Mission Impossible came out. We talked about the Tom Cruise effect and how he affects movies. I mean, he kind of rekindled movie theaters with Top Gun Maverick. He also is really a big reason when we had Barbenheimer. He's a big reason why that was a thing. So kudos to Tom Cruise for that. But I kind of want to know, like, is this with Mission Impossible ending, right? This is supposed to be the final reckoning. We'll see if he reckons one final time after this, but we'll see where that
goes. He's got one reckoning left in him.
He's got one left. That's his last franchise outside of Maverick. I think I read a thing that said he's looking at sequels to Maverick, which I figured, and also Days of Thunder, which no one wants. I don't care what he says. Nobody wants a Days of Thunder.
I would watch a Days of Thunder.
Shut your whore mouth. You would not.
I would totally watch a Days of Thunder. He's like the racing coach for an up and coming driver.
Do you even remember Days of Thunder?
Yes, I do. I love Days of Thunder.
All right. Well, there's three people, you, him, and whoever is in charge of Scientology currently.
Cole Trickle.
All right. So do you think he still is the last movie star? And I think we talked about this a couple years ago. I'm kind of wondering, do you still feel like he is the last movie star? Because Dead Reckoning really wasn't a success. And now you have the Final Reckoning, which is the budget has exploded because of reshoots and that sort of thing and COVID delays, etc. It's going to be very hard to recoup their investment. Is he still the biggest movie star or a movie star? Is that era over?
I think that era is finally kind of dead and over. You know, he does his very best to sit there and push into different media, different types of ways of getting his movies known and noticed and pushed out there. And he is very, very dedicated at what he does. But I think we've gotten just to this point where movie stars just have no weight to them anymore unless they put, even if they put their time into social media, they just don't have it. We're too saturated with people at this point.
Tom Cruise specifically, he hasn't done anything other than Maverick or Mission Impossible. I would need to see him do something like A Risky Business or
ideas to do Risky Business too.
Color of Money or Cocktail, something like he did when he was starting up in his career. Or Return to the Firm or something.
Remember when he didn't do sequels? That's when he was the most interesting of the periods of time that he's had.
The 90s.
I mean, and 80s. Vanilla Sky, Eyes Wide and Shut. 2000s. Lots of good stuff in his portfolio. So it's like he could still be one of those drama type actors that doesn't have to be an action hero. So yeah, he's not a movie star anymore. He's a stuntman. He's a Hollywood promoter, and he loves the theater. I mean, that's really who Tom Cruise is today.
He does love the movie theater. And I will never stop admiring him for that because he goes out of his way to promote other people's movies. He's raged about Sinners and kind of told people, go out, check it out in a movie theater. Don't waste your time waiting for it to come streaming home. Like, he's trying to get people out to movie theaters. He's been he promoted Barbie, even though it was going to be direct competition with him. He still promoted the hell out of it. Like, he's big on the movie theater experience, and I know he's going to make movies forever. I do agree the last 10, 15 years, all he's done is become a Jackie Chan of America by just trying to up his stunt antes. But he used to be like a real actor. He used to be a guy where he made a movie and at least you wanted to see it because it was doing something interesting, something compelling. It was a drama. It was whatever. It was Tropic Thunder, whatever the hell that was. I mean, he did anything. And now I think he just has relegated himself to action movies. But he's in his 60s now. There does come a time, Liam Neeson has found out, when that doesn't work anymore. And you just have to get back to what you do well, which is dramatic fare. And I think Tom Cruise still has it in him. I just don't know. I kind of agree with John. I think the era of a movie star is kind of over. I don't think Tom Cruise is so much a movie star as he has films that really eclipse the social identity. Like, he knows that people will go see Mission Impossible movies because they're known by the name. Top Gun was a huge name brand recognition. If you put him in a brand new property, I don't think it sells $250 million worth of tickets.
Legend 2?
Well, that's again, IP. Right, I'm saying like a new freaking property, like a real new property. Like, a movie star to me is name gets asses in seats. That's a movie star. Tom Cruise used to be that. I do not think he's that anymore. I don't think
there's anyone that's like that anymore.
And that's, movie stars don't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, even your most famous people, Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds, like, it's very hard for them to be successful outside of their known properties.
Yep. And they have to, when they have to put on a show, they're putting on a show the entire time that movie's coming out. Like, they're doing everything they can to draw attention. You know, Tom Cruise is very well known for the fact that he gives 1,000% in absolutely everything. I think earlier in the week, I shared this interview with Nick Offerman, where he's talking about his experience with Tom Cruise, about how he meets Tom Cruise for the first time, and all of a sudden he just wants to be Tom Cruise's best friend. And because the guy shows up and his work ethic is something that you just cannot miss. And the fact that when he talks to people, he's engaged with them and he is pushing the movie in absolutely every way he possibly can. And his charisma just draws you in a way. And like, to listen to Nick Offerman talk about it, it's kind of great, because you don't figure him to be the kind of guy to be like, oh, you know what? That Tom Cruise guy is great. But here we are.
And the problem, though, is that they're doing that on the normal talk show circuit. Like, Tom Cruise isn't like picking up the TikTok and making his own TikTok account. So, like, for as good as his media people are, he should really be like having his like the Cruise Talk.
Or, yeah, no, he needs to Instagram stay as far away from that as possible.
Yeah, that's where I will agree with John, Troy. He should not do free ranging interviews. He's terrible at them. Go find Matt Lauer if you got time. You'll find out. I mean, he knows more about psychiatry than anyone. Just ask him. They have really locked him down in terms of who he is. That's my thing with Tom Cruise. Look, there's a key to being a movie star, and I think the one key is anonymity, right? It's being unable to pigeonhole who a person is. And I do think Tom Cruise is very elusive in that respect. He hides who he is 95% of the time. You only see the salesman. You know, you don't see the guy who goes to Scientology conferences and he's constantly, you know, speaking to a group. You don't see the guy who has a very fractured relationship with his kids. You know, you don't see that because he doesn't talk about that. He doesn't do those kinds of interviews. And there's a reason for it, because people wouldn't respond well to it. People would look negatively at it. But when they look at him in terms of what they're coming to him for, which is entertainment, and I think Brian Williams, former host, he put this in our, you know, we always put the topic in our group. He made a statement that I think really, really kind of speaks to it. No other actor unabashedly loves, cares, and promotes the cinematic experience and industry as Tom Cruise. We need more of him. And I think that's a very, very good statement as to why people love him, because he puts everything into making movies that people want to see and celebrating the form that he wants them to see them in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he bridges generations and markets at the same time. He does all that. He does all that effortlessly.
And he has the best PR team in Hollywood. He really does. Because, I mean, he has overcome a lot of personal flack in terms of his personal religion and his family choices and things like that. Like, he has gotten to the point where he never talks about anything personal. And he's gotten very, very good about moving the conversation into something that's about the movie that they want to talk about, as opposed to anything else.
I don't know. I think his ex is actually doing better than he is, because I see Nicole every week. I don't see Tom every week.
I don't want to see Nicole every week, though. I'd like her to get away from my AMC theaters for a while. You know, I get it, Nicole. We love movies, or we make movies better. You make movies better. Whatever the answer is, just get off my screen.
I want the AMC version of that, where it's every single movie that shows up is a Tom Cruise movie.
That's funny.
Wouldn't that be a good joke if it started like Tom Cruise did those?
Yeah.
He should do that as a joke. That would be a great promotion for Mission Impossible. Bam. I make movies better, bitch.
Wow. We went there.
I meant he's calling the audience a bitch. I didn't mean that he's calling Nicole Kidman. That would be rude. That's his ex-wife. He praises her as a great actress. So I was not saying that. I should have said bitches. Plural.
Better.
But do you think he is an actual good actor from his previous roles when he used to act before he was just Ethan Hunt?
That was a question. Currently or like his entire career?
I mean, here's my thing with Tom Cruise. And I do think he has talent. I think his talent has more to do with selling a movie and making an entertaining film than being a great actor. Like, he's not Brando. He's not Russell Crowe in his heyday. You know, he's not Heath Ledger. He's very much like a guy who is captivating without really being anything different than he always seems. Like, he never really blows me away in terms of his performance, but he consistently makes movies that I want to see. Like Harrison Ford. I never find him to be a deep, soulful actor, but I love watching him in everything.
No, back in his heyday, Born in the 4th of July, The Firm, all those movies in that area, he was acting back then. And I think that he still has that ability. For fuck's sake, we all watched the Reacher movies, and he's supposed to be this 6'2" guy. And if anyone else was going to run in there and be 5'0" and be like, I'm this 6'5" monster, and I wouldn't believe it. But I would believe, because the way he played that character in those movies, that people would be afraid of him.
I believe he believes it. Yeah, I believe he believes it. But he is very much like, he's a little Kevin Hart fella, you know?
Well, we know he believes in love when he jumped over the couch, so.
Oh, see? This is why he doesn't get to go free range on interviews anymore. He's terrible at them. Because when you see a real peek at who he is, it's scary. It's not comfortable.
Yeah, he was like, the 80s and 90s was the heyday, right? Young Guns, Born on the 4th of July, as John said, Few Good Men.
Yeah.
That sequence with Jack Nicholson, still probably one of the best of his career.
Oh, absolutely. And that's due to Jack Nicholson more than him, but absolutely.
I mean, Minority Report was great. Last Samurai was great. War of the Worlds was a little bit bumpy, but I enjoyed
it. But in most of those movies, he's just being Tom Cruise in different scenarios. But he knows how to pick movies that are entertaining and how to make movies more entertaining than they were to begin with.
I really hope the rumor about Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat isn't coming.
I mean, he's doing sequels left and right now. So.
Yep.
Rayman 2, I'm sure, is coming soon.
I would watch that.
Why? Why would you watch Rayman 2?
It's like what happens as they grow up.
Kmart's closed. Definitely Kmart's closed. You know, why would you watch that? Why?
I think it'd be interesting just to see like Dustin Hoffman and Tom get back together again. You could have a good story there.
I want Cocktail 2. He and Elizabeth Shue reconnect in another Jamaican paradise. Why not?
Maybe.
Is that all he's going to do now? Like, that's all he has left? Like, that's where he is?
I think that's where we're going in this conversation. Obviously. I actually think... I think we're probably in this area where he's going to enter that Paul Newman, that elder Paul Newman stage, where he is going to have to act. He is going to have to be the wise elder to some young buck. He is going to have to be some cool ass dude that shows up and like, hey, I'm still fucking cool. I don't care what you say. Look at me. I'm going to be Tom Cruise for a minute and do it in such a way that he doesn't have to hurt himself. He doesn't have to get in a rascal. He doesn't have to get a cast on. He's just going to get into that era where it's going to be just like very cool for him to be on screen. I bet you.
Except he'd be more Eastwood, I think, where he'd still be the lead.
Maybe, okay. But I mean, he does have talent to do like supporting stuff. Magnolia, fantastic in Magnolia. And if you look at Tropic Thunder, that's a very comedic, ridiculous performance where he just went out the window with any reasonable aspect of performing and did his own thing, and he was fantastic. Like, whenever he is willing to take a chance, I think it pays off. I just don't think he's taken a chance in 20 years. He really hasn't. He's been playing it safe. Even Jack Reacher, though definitely not him, he's not 6'5", but it, you know, it's still a typical tough guy action hero kind of role, you know? It's just when you see Alan Ritchson do it, it's like, oh, wow, they should have went that way the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Rock of Ages was in the last 20 years.
Did you think he was wonderful in that?
It was okay. I mean,
what a selling point that is. Yeah, man.
I never saw the movie, but now based off of he was okay, I'm going to totally sit down and rent it now. Way to go, Troy.
Well, it's like it's a whole cast. It's not just Tom. It's like Tropic Thunder. There's more people than just Tom.
I mean, you know what I did find interesting is that if you go through like a bunch of our comments that we have from our post in our group about what the topic is, almost everyone said he has played basically the same character for the last 15 years. Now, I think if you go to the first 15 years of his career, you would not say that. You would say, wow, he's an actor. He takes chances. He does different things. He wants to be different. Lestat was even a big chance-taking undertaking. But then, like the last 15 years, because people weren't going to see his movies, he just started relying on everything that people know him for, and that's all he's done. He only wanted to play it safe. So now that he's in his 60s, and it's going to be much, much harder to do all the action stuff, because let's face it, he is not Jackie Chan, as ripped as he might be. Jackie Chan is a special, unique unicorn. He is a very, very specific individual. I really think Tom Cruise is going to have to get back to the movies that he passed on before.
You know, I don't know if I can really go into this whole idea that every character he's played has been Tom Cruise to some degree or another. Maybe
in the last 15 years.
No, I don't even know if I agree with that because like Reacher was a different one type of character, right? Then you look at
action.
I mean, well, you can't sit there and say that because he's in an action genre every single time we turn around, it's the same character. Because the character he played in Live, Die, Repeat. Okay,
here, I'll tell you action. What. I will go from, we're going to go from 2010. I'm going to go through the movies he's done. You tell me if there are big changes. There's not that many. It's not that as many as you would think.
Okay.
Night and Day, Mission Impossible series. We'll just call them all in one.
Jack Reacher. Okay, that character in his character, Ethan Hunt, started as like this super spy kind of guy, and sure he stayed as a super spy.
Same goddamn character.
Hold on.
Okay.
There's a lot of like little nuanced moments where like You see him crumble before he's about to do something absolutely stupid that he shouldn't be doing. He has those moments. He shows like, okay, here we go. Like, it's not like he's only unbeatable because he's so fucking lucky. And you can see that in what he's doing, because every other time he's like, I don't know how I made it through all this. I see that every time I watch that character on screen.
He made it through because J.J. Abrams saved the franchise.
Well, yes. Okay. True. Continue now.
All right. Rock of Ages, we talked about that one. I will say that was a little bit different for him. That was 2012.
Uh-huh.
It was a minute ago. The Jack Reacher movies. Oblivion. It's space
pseudo
age.
Pseudo-drama.
Yeah, a little bit.
Pseudo-drama. Okay, yeah. That's
Edge of Tomorrow. Kind of Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of
Tomorrow.
Weak version. That guy, Ethan Hunt as a pansy.
That guy did not want to be an... I did not want to be anywhere. He was a slimy little shit, and he was a pansy. Yeah.
Different. Fair enough. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The Mummy...
Another
explain
slimy,
justify
bullshit,
that one.
Go ahead. Another slimy bullshit person who didn't want to do the right thing, and he couldn't be trusted, and he wasn't like a super spy kind of guy. He was a thief.
Yeah, but it was an all action hero mode.
That's not the same thing that we're talking about.
Thing.
We're talking
I'm not about saying it's the exact same character, but it's the same kind of role. It's just like it's running forward. He's running. He's not like challenging himself. Now, American Made, that was in 2017. That's the last time he's challenged himself in anything. 2017 was American Made because that was a little bit different of a character. Since then,
audience score is actually high compared to the other ones that are not Mission Impossible type movies.
He can act. In Top Gun Maverick, it's Maverick. He knows that character back to front. And then Mission Impossible. He's kind of been playing the same character for at least 10 years then.
Yep.
Minus one. I'm just saying, like, he hasn't really been doing much outside of that.
I'm just looking at the nuances and saying that
in Ethan Hunt.
No, give me the 1983 to 1996 Tom Cruise any day. Like, that is the Cruise, in my opinion.
The Cruise. Look at you.
Every movie was different. We should. Color of Money and Cocktail might have been the same kind of guy, but
I like Cocktail. I think that gets a bad rap.
It's cheesy, but it's fun.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I tell you what. We've talked about what we want to see him do next. Now I want to talk about what we want to see Mission Impossible do next. And what I mean by that is this is supposed to be the final reckoning, right? Last movie, allegedly. They're going to reboot it. They're going to remake it. They're going to do something. So we're going to make our own freaking Mission Impossible movie. And I've kind of broken this into six different elements. And you guys should know what you have to deal with. So we're going to create the plot, where it's going to be, and what the organization is going to be, and who's going to be in charge of it, who the actors are going to be, etc. So Troy, you get to start. Give us a plot MacGuffin, something for our team to stop. Doesn't matter how stupid it is. Come on. What do you got? Oh, this is our Mission Impossible movie. This is the whole, it's Mission Impossible whole control. I don't know.
I mean, we're trying to like lure Tom Cruise back with the stunts, right?
So No, Tom Cruise is not part of this. This is a reboot. This is a remake. It's a whole new thing. He's not part of it. So we're
It's a state-of-the-art spaceship. State-of-the-art spaceship that is planned to go up into orbit, and some kind of evil nefarious group is hijacking it in order to blow up the International Space Station in favor of one they're about to launch themselves.
Okay. So blow up the space station. That's the ultimate goal, right?
Correct.
All right, John, give us three locations around the world.
All right. I've got Reykjavik, Iceland. It's going to be a snow-covered data hub buried under a volcano.
Okay.
All right. Kyoto, Japan, a high-tech robotics lab masquerading as a Zen temple.
Okay.
And then Nairobi, Kenya. This is where the final showdown happens, at a solar-powered station hidden underneath in the savannah.
All right. So now we've got a plot. We've got locations, and I'm going to give you the evil organization that we have to thwart. It's the Department of Incorporated Communist Kinship and Solidarity. Dicks. Maybe we give the name, maybe we don't. Maybe we just say what it is and people can spell it in their heads. Now, Troy, give us a team leader and an actor or actress to play them.
I'm going to go one male, one female. You guys can decide who you'd rather prefer. For the male, I went with Gerard Butler. And then for female, I still went with Yvonne Stravosky because I think she was awesome in 24.
Do you have a name for our team leader?
A name for the team leader? No.
What about Ava Cross for that, huh?
Ava Cross would be good too.
Yeah. That's the team. That's her name.
I love it. So we're going with Yvonne, Ava Cross.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in. John, give us the team strategist or go the person who gives the team their orders and the actor who plays them.
Leon Vega. He's calm. He's brilliant. Always two steps ahead. He writes contingency plans, and he's just awesome. And it's Oscar Isaac.
Okay. I like this. And I'm going to give you the villain at the head of the organization, and the actor is going to play him. Baron Dunamis, which is a Greek word for power. I did research. Fuck yeah. Played by Michael Fassbender, because nobody says dicks like Michael Fassbender.
Nobody has a dick like Michael Fassbender.
If you've seen any of his movies, you know what I'm saying. Boom. We got a movie. Mission Impossible Ho Edition. I think that's it.
That's it.
See how easy this shit is? Why does it take them so long to write these? It's not that hard.
Because they're too busy writing Fast and the Furious ones, because that's what this sounds like.
It's so much easier than they make it out to be.
All we need is somebody to say family, and we're in.
Family. Okay.
Yeah, if there was only a podcast that had a whole bunch of ideas that they could pull from.
I know. It's like, they should call it like, what, Remake This Movie Right?
Or maybe call something it that. Like that. Remake This Movie Right sounds like a great
podcast. Did we ever do Mission Impossibles on that podcast? I don't think we did.
I don't remember. I don't think we did.
Huh. Should go back and redo it. Should be a Patreon bonus episode. All right. Well, now we're going to go into some upcoming attractions. Troy, what's coming out in theaters? May 30th first.
Yeah, May 30th, we are going to see Karate Kid coming back on the big screen, and they're going to merge it together. So you're going to have the Jackie Chan side and the Danielson side, and they're going to come together to kick some ass. It's going to be amazing. Cannot wait. Karate Kid Legends is going to be there. Check out our summer movie preview episode if you want to know more. Then Bring Her Back, rated R, is going to be coming as well. A brother and sister uncover a terrifying ritual at scheduled home of their new foster mother.
Secluded.
Sure.
What did he say?
He said scheduled.
Well, they're scheduled home. They have a visit scheduled.
Their summer home.
That's from the directors of Talk to Me, which is a great horror movie. So I can't wait to see that, actually.
Talk to Me was fantastic.
I'm pretty stoked for this. Coming out and streaming May 31st, Mountain Head from the creators of Succession. So I have no interest in this whatsoever. But a group of billionaire friends, Steve Carell, Jason Schwartzman, Corey Michael Smith, and Rami Youssef, get together against the backdrop of a rolling international crisis. And it's going to be on Max. And then we jump ahead because we're not going to have a new episode till June 6th, Troy. So what else we got coming up on June 5th? Yeah,
so while we're all taking a break for the holiday here in the States, and then you guys are going to have to wonder, like, well, what the hell do I watch? Because no one told me what to do. We're going to tell you right now that on June 5th, Dogma Resurrected, 25th anniversary celebration. That's right. Go back and visit it again. The comedy that follows two fallen angels, Bartleby and Loki, played by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, respectively. They discover a loophole that would allow them to return to heaven, which would inadvertently undo the creation of the universe.
Are you going to that, John?
Maybe. I might.
They have Kevin Smith tickets. Are you going to see the one with Kevin Smith in your area?
No, I'm not going to do that.
You should. That'd be fun.
What's? Anyways.
Sorry.
Then, then on June 6th. That's right. June 6th. The John Wick universe comes to life once again. In Ballerina, a female assassin bent on revenge hunts down those responsible for killing her family, and at Armistars, and Keanu Reeves will pop in because obviously somewhere in the timeline this exists.
It takes place between John Wick 3 and John Wick 4.
There you go. The Phoenician Scheme will be the counter programming and PG-13 rating. Benicio del Toro stars in the film as Zsa Korda, one of the richest men in Europe, while Mia Thirpleton plays his daughter and Michael Cera portrays the tutor for her.
That's Wes Anderson movie. I will be at Ballerina.
All right. Well, then some other people might want to check out Dangerous Animals when Zephyr, a savvy and free-spirited surfer, is abducted by a shark-obsessed serial killer and held captive on his boat. She must figure out how to escape before he carries out a ritualistic feeding to the sharks below.
Hey, before you move on, John, this is where, remember when we had the summer movie preview and you're like, so is it a shark serial killer? Like, do they target sharks? This is another clarification that no, it's a serial killer who feeds people to sharks.
Two sharks.
Was that me that said that?
It was you or Troy, but I'm just going to blame
Troy.
You. No, let's blame you. No,
it's
good.
All right, I'll take it.
I'll just give it to you.
Then one that I'm going to go see is The Life of Chuck.
Me too.
It's going to be in limited release this weekend. It'll come out wide the weekend after, but it's the adaptation of Stephen King's novella of the same name. Tells a story about the life of Charles Chuck Krantz, a man dying from a brain tumor. And then in limited release wrapping up the weekend is I Don't Understand You. As a married couple, Dom and Cole set off to Italy in an effort to reconnect after 10 years of marriage and before bringing home their adopted child. They encounter a series of hysterical, increasingly intense cultural barriers that threaten to upset their best laid plans. Amanda Seyfried and Joel Edgerton and Nick Kroll star in this one.
All right. And streaming June 5th, Ginny and Georgia on Netflix, Tires on Netflix, and then June 6th on Netflix, Straw, which is Taraji P. Henson and directed by Tyler Perry. A single mother faces a series of unfortunate events that leads her down an unexpected path. She becomes entangled in a situation she never imagined and finds herself at the center of suspicion in a world that seems indifferent to her existence. So much stuff. And also on Hulu, rated R, Predator, Killer of Killers. It's a three-part animated anthology that showcases Yuusha warriors hunting human prey across global history. Ooh, it's going to be animated so they can do all kinds of stuff. Now, what you been watching? So, what you guys been watching?
On Netflix, there's this new show that just dropped over the weekend by the insane brain that is Tom Segura, and the show is called Bad Thoughts. And it is... it's a problem. The show is a problem. It's got some skits in it. What it is basically a skit show done by Tom Segura. So if you know his comedy, you'll know what kind of stuff we'll be looking at. But it leans into the absurd and disgusting pretty quick. And Aaron, your boy, Dan Stevens is all over this.
Is
he? He's having a good time. He is having the best time.
That just sounds weird.
Yeah, it is. The first two episodes, you kind of look at the screen with your head tilted going, what am I watching? And then the third and fourth episode, you will be laughing your ass off. And then the final episode, you're like, back to what am I watching? Because it is funny. And then at times you're like, am I allowed to laugh at this? Does that make me a bad person? You know, but it's great. I really enjoyed sitting down, and it's a quick watch. It's easy, and it's definitely the out of the brain of Tom Segura.
So if $10 is full price of admission, what do you give that one?
I give it $6.
Okay. Now, Troy, you watched Duster. Do you want to talk to that on Max?
Yeah, Duster is about trying to track down a kind of, what do you want to call it? Mafia criminal empire.
Yep.
That's kind of moved around the country over the years, currently landing in Arizona. And so basically we have Josh Holloway driving what would be the new General Lee for a modern era, doing all kinds of stunt car races and stuff. And he looks fucking cool as hell doing it. It also focuses around an up and coming female black FBI agent, which for the time this takes place in the 70s, it would be a pretty big deal. And she comes in to work the case to find this criminal organization. And she has to track down Duster to see if Duster will help her take down the kingpin in this entire operation. So I love the female lead in this. It's fantastic.
Rachel Hilson.
Yep. Yep. She's so good. The way that she works the room, the way she works the people that are kind of like scoffing at her, right? Like, oh, you're a woman and you're black. I mean, there's a lot of undertones there. Mm-hmm. The big thing is this is a J.J. Abrams property written and directed by J.J. Abrams in that first episode. And he has the signature J.J. Abrams stuff, right? Big names of locations that fly over the background with no reason for it to be there at all. That's back from a J.J. Abrams perspective. Greg Grunberg shows up in this. He's the head of the FBI field office in Phoenix. Greg's obviously good friends with J.J., so surprise, Greg's back. Or no surprise in that way. But yeah, I love the first episode. Only one is two will be out probably by the time you hear this. And it's definitely worth picking up. I like the way that the first episode landed from a pilot perspective. Good twist at the end.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's got that 70s funky, whatever.
The music was great.
Cool car chases, great music. And again, I love Rachel Hilson. She was fantastic. And she's kind of like the FBI agent who tries to get Jim, who's Josh Holloway, into the fold as an informant. And it's pretty cool. Man, it's not great. It's not great TV. But it's good TV.
Fun TV. It's background TV.
Definitely is background TV. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. And I saw A Hell of a Summer. And I've been wanting to see this for a while. Man, it's a throwback to slasher flicks, which I love slasher flicks. And it is different. It's written and directed by Billy Burke and Finn Wolfhard. You know, Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. They're both in the movie as different characters, Chris and Bobby, respectively. And basically what it is it follows Fred Heisinger's Jason, wink, wink, nod, nod, who wants to work at a summer camp and goes back and he's very old. He's too old to be working in a summer camp. He's 24. It's too old. And people start dying. And it's basically who is killing who, why are they killing them, and what is going on in this horror comedy. And it's definitely kind of, if you ever watch... God, was it Saturday the 17th or Tuesday the 17th, right?
On Saturday Psych? The 13th.
No. Tuesday the 17th. I'm talking about the Psych episode. It's very similar to the Psych episode in terms of tone and what it's going for. It's definitely trying for that horror comedy approach. It's trying to give you a lot of kills, but also with a lot of laughs. It's very slasher focused. It never really finds its footing. Like, it doesn't really find a good, solid pinning of tone, so it's kind of all over the place, but I still enjoyed it for kind of an easy slasher watch. It's just nowhere near as good as I think it could have been if they had just been consistent and really found what they were looking for and stuck to it. So if $10 full price admission, I give it $5, but I will tell you that Billy Burke and Finn Wolfhard, they have the potential for really strong writers and directors here. Like, they really show that they love the genre. They show that they respect the genre, most importantly, and that they're willing to take a few chances within the genre. So I think those three things really make me interested for what they do next. And it shows that Finn Wolfhard is a lot more than just the the kid on Stranger Things. He's really well positioned to become a filmmaker in his own right. So hell of a summer. It's not great. It's worth $5. It's worth a watch, but it's not going to blow you away. Now we've got a couple of reviews, including Mission Impossible: The Final Reckoning, but we'll get there in a minute. But first, here's a review of Friendship.
All right. So you saw a movie that we talked about earlier, which is Friendship. Mm-hmm. A suburban dad named Craig has his life turned upside down by the arrival of a new neighbor. As Craig's attempts to make an adult male friend spiral out of control, their blossoming relationship threatens to ruin both of their lives. Stars Tim Robinson, Paul Rudd, Kate Mara, and directed by Andrew DeYoung.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you've seen that Netflix show that Tim Robinson does, which is I Think You Should Leave, where he does little small vignettes. It's very much like that. But if you've never seen that, which a lot of people have not, when the movie starts, you think Tim Robinson is actually going to be the normal guy and Paul Rudd's going to be the crazy friend, right? Nope. The other way around. Tim Robinson is the star of the movie and he gets, you can tell like he does not have a good, solid friendship in his life. So once he finally gets a friend, he does not want to let that friend go.
Oh.
And so what happens is he ends up having a moment with Paul Rudd's friends, which makes Paul Rudd go, you're fucking loony. So, or this is not going to work as a friendship, whatever. And he basically says, hey, we can't be friends anymore. And then Tim Robinson just loses his goddamn mind. Craig loses his mind. And it ends up being like this just insane, very surreal kind of satire on friendship, on male friendship, on the desperate need to connect, and it affects his marriage. And there's so many just inappropriate jokes, and it goes down so many rabbit holes that, oh my God, I can't, how did we get here? How did this happen? How did this comic get made? Like it's freaking funny. It's very funny and it's unapologetic. And also just wild. And I love the last scene in the movie. I won't tell you, once you see it, you'll get it. I just love the last scene in the movie. It's just kind of perfect. So I had a very good time with it.
Sounds very entertaining. And it does come to theaters May 9th. But what was your score for Friendship?
I give that one $8. I had a really good time. I haven't laughed that hard in a very long time. So that's saying something. Okay. And now our review of Mission Impossible, The Final, wink, wink, nod, nod, Reckoning. Dun, 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 dun. This is your mission, if you choose to accept it. And that's to listen to my spoiler-free review of Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. That means you get so much more reckoning, and it's all reckoning. There's so much to reckon with, including this air quotes plot and how this thing ends. So, but first I want to tell you, okay, not only I saw it, so you just got me. You just got Aaron. I'm sorry. I love Dead Reckoning Part 1. I thought that was the best Mission Impossible since the first one. I thought it was phenomenal. I absolutely just adored the pace, the character, the most of the plot, even though I thought having AI as a villain was kind of questionable choice. And then we get to this one, which is kind of the completion. It was supposed to originally be Dead Reckoning Part 2, but they changed it to The Final Reckoning since the Dead Reckoning Part 1 didn't do so great. And they needed to kind of just, hey, let's pretend like this is its own movie. All right. So in this one, Ethan Hunt, the only man who can do anything in the entire world, is tasked once again with saving it. And this time, if he doesn't do it, it's going to be hell on earth. It's going to be nuclear war. It's basically just going to destroy the entire planet. And only one man can stop this, because we apparently do not educate anyone else in the military to handle problems such as this. We only have this one guy, and his name is Tom Cruise. Okay, so he's got to come out. He has to find certain MacGuffins to make sure that the entity, which is the AI villain, is dismantled, and there's very, very specific ways that they have to do it. Otherwise, it will not work. That is the plot of this picture, of this film. And it's supposed to be the end of the franchise, you know, 8 films, and Tom Cruise has been in every single one of them. It's been going since 1996, which I find fascinating, fascinating, absolutely fascinating, especially if you're paying attention. There's actually a plot point that uses the release date of the original film. May 22nd, 1996. I think that's very clever, very funny, and I knew it right away, but they work it as the plot point. So here's what I think. They're trying to connect all of these films and kind of make it, you know, show us why Ethan Hunt has been so prominent, why he's so important to everything that's happened in the world and how he's connected to everything. Here's the thing. Okay. So I love Dead Reckoning Part 1. This was clunky. There is so much exposition. I mean, I feel like every time someone does talk, they're explaining the stories a little too much. They're over-explaining everything. You will hear the word entity so much, the entity so much. If it was a drinking game, you would be in the ER. Like, it's that serious, okay? There are so many references to the entity. It's exhausting. And when you have AI as a villain, I mean, if you've watched any TV show or anything else where AI is a threat, you already know it's a struggle, right? You need a physical threat. Otherwise, it's a little too abstract. And especially when you're in a franchise like this, right? You need a tangible villain. And they do have the villain from the last film, who was great. And Gabriel, which is Isai Morales, he was great in the last film. I think he had a lot more to do, a lot more to chew on. And here, he's just constantly saying the same things over and over. He's reiterating the same thing. He's the entity and every other MacGuffin that comes up, he has to just keep regurgitating the same nonsense. I can't believe, look, I know these movies are meant to be just ridiculous action spectacles. And I've said, I don't know how many times that you can barely remember the plots in most of them, right? Cause they don't matter. It's all just a way to connect the dots. So you get a cool action scene, a little bit of a thriller aspect, some intrigue. Tom Cruise running. Yes, he's running. There's actually a scene. Can't make this freaking up. He's trying. This happens very early in the movie. So I am not spoiling anything. He literally could take a car and get there 10 times faster, but instead he's going to run. He's running across a freaking bridge. Do you think Tom Cruise, as fast as he may be, can run faster than a car across a bridge to get to possibly, you know, help someone? It doesn't make any sense to me other than, hey, he looks good running and that's our thing. We do that. There's even a scene where he chases a plane on foot. He's not going to catch a plane on foot. He's not going to beat people who left in a Jeep. He's not going to beat them to the airport. It just doesn't happen. There are so many like complete lapses in logic for these spectacles that it drives me nuts. The second hour is kind of set very much on water, underwater. There's a submarine tie-in. If you saw Dead Reckoning, you know what I'm talking about. And that whole sequence defies so much in terms of the laws of physics. It's science fiction. Don't get me wrong. Look, it's just like Fast and Furious. You just kind of accept it and roll with it. But at some point, you got to go, okay, this is a dumb plan. All of the plans in this movie are dumb. They don't make any sense. In fact, the final plan, I will not spoil, but if you watch it, the plan that he has is not at all what happens. And you find out that actually there was a better option if he just would have considered how it, you know, once you see how it ends, that was a better option than the one that they came up with. It makes no sense. The plan is idiotic. It's really idiotic. And I'm kind of ashamed of the team for going along with it, for thinking that's a good plan. Oh my God. I don't know what to say. And it feels like I am just trashing the movie, and I'm not. I mean, there's definitely some things to be enjoyed here. I mean, I can even find things to like in the second one. I'm sorry. His hair looked cool there. I do think he's getting a little old for the long hair. Just doesn't work the older you get, but you know, that is what it is. All right. So the entity is a problem. The set pieces, the first hour I think is pretty enjoyable, and there's a lot of humanity on tap. I think they're trying so hard to force in the previous movies though, and try and connect those dots that it's a little ridiculous also. And so here's the thing, just one of these things, and I think this movie would have worked fine. Try to connect all the dots, fine, but make the plan make sense. Have the entity as the villain, but don't try to force all these connections and make the plan make sense. You know, just one of the three of these problems, and I think this is a much better movie because it has three distinct problems, which is the AI as a villain is a terrible villain. There's even a scene that basically seems pulled out of Star Trek. I won't spoil it. Then you have the forced connections to the original film, although I do like the date thing. I think that's actually pretty clever, and a lot of people probably won't get it. And then you have the plans that are terrible. There are some, they can lead to some interesting set pieces, but they are terrible plans. And I'm saying that as an audience member who's hearing it going, that's a terrible plan. Let everybody in the audience knows that you just said was a dumb idea. There's got to be a better way to do this. Why are we doing it this way? Have we not met James Cameron? I'm sure we have equipment that can get to the bottom of the ocean. We don't need just one dude to do it. Let's ask the government for one of those James Cameron submersible submarines. I bet you we can get this handled so much faster. Like, there's so much more sensical ways to handle some of the stuff that just boggle my mind and could have been cooler set pieces. And I got to say, you know, you've seen in the trailer, commercials, whatever, the biplane, that chase is a very big set piece. I found it underwhelming. I thought it was a little, honestly, weak when that occurs. Is really not that riveting in comparison to Dead Reckoning Part One, where that whole train escape and, you know, it's going over the edge and there's a train chase. And that was phenomenal. Like, so phenomenal. And this is still the same director as Christopher McQuarrie, who I think works great with Tom Cruise. I think they have a really good connection, and I'm very, very, very disappointed, I guess, in terms of how they chose to go through with this. They had all the time in the world, all the money in the world, and they made a finale to a series that deserved better. It just deserved better. I'm just trying to be honest. I just can't give this one a blank pass. So the heavy exposition is a problem. There's a lot of references to only Ethan Hunt can solve this problem, right? The whole world's going to fucking end. Sorry, pardon my French. And only Ethan Hunt can solve the problem. Only Ethan Hunt. The guy that hasn't followed orders in any of the movies, they even make a point to point that out. This is the one guy that never follows orders. He hasn't done anything he said he's going to do, but we're going to trust him to do what he said he's going to do this time. I don't get it. There's got to be more qualified people on staff, or we need to start vetting people better. What is going on with our application process? Like, really, what are we doing anymore in this particular government? That might be an oxymoron. There's all of that. And, you know, again, I want to say, like, it doesn't go according to plan. Nothing seems to go according to plan. The money's here. I don't think this is, I think some estimates have us at like $300 million for this budget because of reshoots and whatnot. I don't know. I mean, it's going to have to make a ton to kind of break even, but I will say we get a lot of throwbacks to original cast. We get Pom Clementia from the last film as Paris. I think she's great. Very intense. She gets a little bit more to do, I think, in terms of the film. Kittredge is back. Always fun to see him. You've got some nice little kind of throwaway roles. Holt McKellany is in here, and Nick Offerman as well is in here. So you've got a good cast. Hannah Waddingham is in here at one point. Janet McTeer from Ozark. Good cast. Plus, Ving Rhames, man. Luther's in here. I love Luther. Love me some Luther. Benji is here. Simon Pegg is in the cast. And of course, Hayley Atwell returns as Grace, who, you know, it seems like a love interest. You decide when you watch the movie if you feel like that's the route that they're going with it. And everybody kind of plays the part. Angela Bassett, who can forget her, and Shea Whigham is in here. Like, there's a great cast. It's a great cast. And Christopher McQuarrie is normally a director who is foolproof, in my opinion. He really knows how to ratchet up tension and make things riveting. I just don't think it works here. I think it's an overlong, hamstrung kind of film that this franchise deserved better. It reminds me of like how Fast 9 took itself too seriously. Remember, was it Fast 9? Yeah, Fast 9, which took itself way too seriously and ended up kind of thinking it was bigger and deeper than it really was. And I get a lot of that. I mean, when you have characters that constantly remind the audience of what the plot is and what the plan is, that's disappointing because you are not trusting us to be smart enough to even remember what the dumbass plan was. And it happens a lot. And there are elements, like, I think the second hour where, you know, I'm talking about the water and underwater, I think that could have been a very intense sequence, and there are moments where it is, but it's drug out so damn long that, no, it just doesn't work. But then we get to the Tom Cruise of it all, right? So we've talked about him earlier. He's still a movie star. I mean, he still captivates the screen, holds the screen. I do think sometimes he relies a little too much on kind of the antics of the past, like the running, like I talked about. There's no practical reason why he's running in several instances when he could be driving. And it is what it is. You just kind of, okay, I guess they want to see him run. There, you know, obviously his shirt's got to come off a couple times, got to show that he's still got the abs at almost 60. You know, all of that is the typical Tom Cruise in a movie situation. But what I feel here with this particular film, and I don't know if it's ego, I don't know if it, what it is. When it comes to Cruise, this is a guy that is excellent at giving audiences what they want. He knows his audience. He's very, very adept at understanding a cinematic audience and making people want to go see something in a theater. I think he overplayed his hand here. I really, really do. I really think, I don't know if it's trying too hard. I don't know if it's overthinking it. It's just, man, he should have reeled in the AI villain, should have, I think, chosen a better stunt sequence for the final act, because I don't think it really works well. I think McQuarrie maybe should have dialed up the intensity a little bit in terms of the tension in the final act as well, although there's a lot of things happening at one time. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, Cruise still has it. Tom Cruise still has it. I have no doubt. But it reminded me a lot of The Mummy. Remember when he did The Mummy? And, you know, kind of the Dark Universe was, I think it was 2017. The Dark Universe was announced, and it was starting with The Mummy, and Tom Cruise was the lead of that movie. And once he got involved, it became like a very Tom Cruise vehicle. Like, it wasn't a Mummy movie. It was a Tom Cruise vehicle, and it kind of shortchanged that film. I feel like this is about where it's about in line with The Mummy. That's about how I feel. I feel like maybe he overplayed his hand and made it too much of a Tom Cruise vehicle, because there were a lot of opportunities here to make something great. This could have been tightly paced. This could have been use the actors that you have and recreate that tension and that fun and camaraderie you had in past films, especially the last one. Like I said, I loved the last one. I thought it was so freaking good. I mean, if $10 is the full price of admission, I'm giving Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning $5. I really, really didn't think it lived up to the hype, the potential, to Tom Cruise, to his name, to his legendary status in Scientology and how, you know, their town of Clearwater, Florida. Look it up. They actually own a lot of Clearwater, Florida. It's interesting. You know, I just don't know what went wrong here. And I don't think this is a bad movie. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's okay. I mean, it's okay to be okay, but it's just okay. I was not impressed. There aren't stunts that I'm going to recall and take away from this and start telling friends, man, you got to see this on the big screen. You got to see that on the big screen. And if you've ever listened to this podcast, I do that all the time. It's a thing I do. I'm constantly saying, go see it in the theater. I'm telling you, it's fine if you don't. I mean, if you want to see how it ends, great. I want to recommend a movie to be seen in the cinema. I'd love to tell you this is going to be fantastic in IMAX. I think it's just an okay time. So take that for what you will. I'm sorry to end the podcast on a downer, if that's how you see it. But I think the problem with when people love franchises and they love actors and whatnot is there's always seeming to be a struggle with accepting that sometimes the movie or TV show is just okay. It's like Star Wars, right? It's either you love it or you loathe it. You can't be in the middle. I'm in the middle on this one. I'm in the middle. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed my review of Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Now, let's reboot it, because we had a great idea to reboot it, and I think that's the way to go. Bradley Cooper's available. All right, that's it. Guys, we're done. We're done. We're out of here.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
For the official start of summer.
To be off Memorial Day weekend?
I don't got a lot going on. I'll miss you guys.
Oh, will you though? What are you guys doing? Are you doing? Do you have any Memorial Day plans? Are you doing anything?
I literally just said I don't got anything going on.
I just thought you were bullshitting. I've got a party to go to. You don't? Do you have anybody have a party to go to? No, we've got nothing going on. You told me.
No, just trying to enjoy the outdoors. Going to do some outdoor stuff.
You want to go to Johns? Let's go to Johns. Let's go hang out in Tampa.
Yeah, it's Tampa.
I don't know if you guys want to do that, man. People are stepping outside and bursting into flames immediately.
It is very hot.
Already?
There. Yeah. It's
Florida.
It's ridiculous.
Florida is like roasting from what, May to October?
Do you have dust storms?
Something like that.
I'm coming down if there's no dust storms.
There's no dust storms, no, but it's already pretty hot. Like, I went for my run Sunday morning, and usually it's kind of nice, and it was absolutely not that. It was brutal already.
What time did you go out for your run?
We can't go an episode without John mentioning his run. I think it's like required by law at this point.
It's either that or he's going to talk about friggin' Grey's Anatomy. So, I mean,
it's true.
Can't oh my gosh, shit. We're going to talk about the finale. Oh my God.
No, we're not going to do that. So, my run starts at 8 in the morning.
8 in the morning? No wonder you're dying. You got to get out there at 5:30, dude.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that. I need a little bit of sleep.
Well, Lottie, frickin' da. I just watched Poker Face that had a Florida storyline. Where?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was actually pretty ridiculously hilarious, where there's an alligator involved. I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but basically an alligator is framed for murder, and I'm not making this up. That's the storyline.
There was a story just a couple weeks ago where this couple was kayaking down a river, and they were purposely went over what they thought was a down tree, turned out to be a giant alligator, and the wife died.
Well, damn. Mine was a fictional TV show, not a real life murder.
Yeah, this was a real life murder. Murder.
Did they find the alligator?
Yeah, I think they found the alligator.
You know, according to Poker Face, once they smell once they have the taste of blood, you have to put them down.
Alligators are very, very don't give a shit about what they eat. They'll eat anything. So it's not about the scent of blood.
It was a great version of Columbo to see how Charlie was going to figure out how to free an alligator that was wrongly being accused of murder. I'm just saying it's a good episode of television. That's all. Camille and Johnny is the victim. So it's interesting. Funny. It's worth a watch. It's worth a watch. We have Peacock. Yeah. All right. That's it for this episode. We're done. I hope everybody has a wonderful couple days off. Remember what Memorial Day stands for. It's actually a very important reason for the holiday. I'm not going to go into that. I'm not going to preach to you, but you should look into it. And that's going to do it for this episode. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn.